You know, most of us don't want to talk about losing. As a brand new chaplain, I preached about it at a St. Albans school service. What you learn about yourself and the world through failure, what it means to lose well, how to keep your dignity or preserve your integrity and act with respect for your opponent. And I remember having the headmaster corner me afterwards. Mr. Wilson is maybe 6'6" tall, a success by any measure, a college basketball player, a published author, a big guy. He clapped my shoulder with his bear-sized hand and said, "We believe in winning here, Mr. Ware." "Winning," I repeated, like a parrot. "What about Winston Churchill?" I asked recklessly. "You know, success is never found, failure is never fatal, courage is the only thing." "Winning," Wilson said again, moving through a sea of boys. "Victory at all costs, victory in spite of all terror, victory however long and hard the hard may be," he added. I got the point. You don't get very far in Washington, D.C., or anywhere else for that matter, unless you believe in winning and achieve it, more often than not. It's deep within us. And it's not just for fun and games. Survival is for the fittest, after all. The strongest, or the fastest, or the smartest. They're the ones who come out on top. And knowing that is why Jesus' words in the gospel this morning can be so hard to take. "Deny yourself," he says. "Take up your cross." In other words, lose yourself to find yourself. What use is winning the whole world if in the process you lose the real you? He asks. I wonder how his first followers made sense of him here. They'd already given everything, boats, nets, family, work, and arguably they were pretty low on the totem pole even before those losses. This was a peasant's movement, after all, and Peter's confession here gives voice to their murmuring hopes. "You're the Messiah," he said, "the one we've been looking for, the one who'll cast down the mighty from their thrones and raise up the lowly from their poor estate." Following Jesus was going to make them winners, they believed. And I imagine they were looking forward to crushing more than Satan under their heels when they were put in charge. Do you blame them? But what happens when you spend your whole life scrambling to get on top of the pile, only to discover that when you get there, the reward is just more scrambling and more work, more competition and a target on your back, with some folks not satisfied until they take you down? We don't know a whole lot about St. Alban, who lends his name to the school where I served for 6 years. What we do know is that in the year 301, a priest came to what is now England to tell the stories of Jesus, and he stayed with a well-to-do young man named Alban. These were the earliest days of taking the gospel abroad, a dangerous period in which following Jesus was risky, even life-threatening, if ever your faithfulness threatened the power structure. Some legends say that Alban became a Christian while the priest was his guest. So impressed was the young host by the priest's humility and devotion. Other legends, mindful of the priest's short visit, suggest that Alban didn't have time to convert. But all the legends agree on this point. One night, an angry mob banged on Alban's door, demanding the priest and thirsty for his blood. Alban, fully aware of the situation outside his house, shrouded himself in the visitor's traveling cloak and presented himself as the priest. "God be with you," said Alban in the voice of his Christian guest, and the violent crowd leapt on him and tore Alban limb from limb. Alban knew exactly what he was doing when he answered the door. He was protecting the life of his house guests. Literally, the scapegoat. Alban gave his life so that the priest could escape and live. I leaned on that story of St. Alban quite a bit in my years at the boys' school in Washington. We all did. Whatever their religion, we would ask the boys and their parents and the staff and the faculty to live sacrificially while they were associated with the school, speaking to a community not unlike this one, intelligent, wealthy by any standard relative to most of the world, busy with sports and family and work or school. We would say, put the other guy first. With all that you've been given, serve. But lose your life to find it? Carry the cross and follow Jesus? That's for religious fanatics, isn't it? Maybe not. One theologian said, while we might prefer to make a single dramatic sacrifice as an expression of our commitment, like Alban, usually the way of faithfulness involves laying down our lives in little pieces, step by step, through seemingly small decisions and unremarkable acts of kindness and generosity. Maybe we don't understand at all what winning and losing really mean. And the founder of Back on My Feet didn't plan to start a nonprofit that helped homeless people gain independence, develop skills for living, and build healthy habits and community. She was a young executive who had just landed her dream job that came with a corner suite in downtown Philadelphia. But in her first week at work, she literally closed her office door, looked around at what she'd achieved, and had a sinking feeling in the pit of her stomach. Is this it? She thought to herself. You see, as a high school cross-country runner, she'd come home one afternoon to see all of her family's possessions being carried to the curb. She learned that day that her father was a compulsive gambler, didn't know it before, and he'd lost everything on a series of bets gone bad. To keep the demons at bay, she strapped on her shoes and put in her miles and showed up for herself and the rest of the squad. Running and her teammates helped her make sense of her chaos. She had the same instinct as she slipped out of her Center City office tower in 2007 for a run, shedding stress as she pounded the pavement, and Anne couldn't shake that she was more interested in the homeless people along her route than she was with the folks back at her office. A few weeks later, she stopped in the Sunday Rescue Mission and asked the director if she could start a running club for the residents. He looked up from his desk, incredulous. Lady, homeless people don't run. But if you promise to bring shoes and shorts, I'll put up a sign for you. Well, three folks showed up that first Saturday, and 11 years later, there are chapters in 12 cities across the country. All of us back on our feet for one reason or another. Many of the folks in the early morning circles are in recovery. And the combination of accountability and affection nurtured by clocking mile after mile beside each other is life-giving. I know that the world would call us, some of us, a circle of losers, but I think we're finding our lives. Do you have the world, the whole world, and still feel bankrupt sometimes? I'm reminded of a college professor who spoke to the whole school community as a new semester was beginning. He said, "You have come to the university not, first of all, to equip yourself technically for a job." Now, the whole community was there, and so I'm not sure how the parents in the audience felt about that assertion with the ink still wet on their checks for tuition. After a bit of nervous laughter, the teacher continued, "No, you've come here, first of all, to lose your life, so that one day you might find it." That wasn't what any of the students had expected to hear, and now the whole room was listening. All the shuffling and whispering ceased. He said, "If this place does for you what it should, you'll knock up against all sorts of people with different views about the most fundamental things. You'll think and talk and argue and laugh. You'll enjoy yourself, but you'll suffer too. For in the general atmosphere of thought and discussion and criticism and laughter, the city inside you will be overthrown. What you have so far considered obviously true or clearly false may not now seem so certain. What so far has appeared as certainly good or profoundly bad may now not seem so obvious. All in all, you'll be releasing your grip on what so far you've lived by, in order that it may be weighed in the balance and its real worth discovered. Don't worry about losing, he said. Failure can be a really good teacher. Don't worry about suffering. Embrace it. Let the old man or the old woman in you die. What good would it do to get everything you want and lose you, the real you? You know, there's a principle that runs through all of life from top to bottom. Give up yourself and you'll find your real self. Keep nothing back. Nothing in us that has not died will ever be raised from the dead. You hear that? Nothing in us that has not died will never be raised from the dead. Let go of what you hold most dear. Your success, your spouse, your possessions, your righteous indignation, your fear. Let it go. Look for Christ instead. Because when your whole world falls apart, you can see things and people that you've never seen before. What are you willing to lose? What are you willing to lose so that the real you, which the world so desperately needs, might be found? Amen.